Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 12th, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I don't know if you know this about me, but I tend to like the Science Channel.
I try to learn as little about you as possible.
I figured that's the case.
Because everything I learn about you scares me a little bit more. I did not know that you like the...
It's a good thing, too, because that way everything is sort of spontaneous on the show and not planned. But speaking of being scared, usually when people watch this kind of channel, they usually get scared because usually the shows are about, here comes the asteroid that could kill us, or... the sun's going to blow up pretty soon. And, you watch these shows and you realize it's billions of years away, or, yeah, I guess this big thing is going to... You start feeling sorry for the people who, if they are still around, you know, they're going to have to face this someday, but...
I'm not feeling bad for them. You know how awesome the world is going to be at that point?
How awesome.
I mean, look at how much more awesome the world is 5 years from now. I mean, my phone does everything for me now, except when I drop it on the sidewalk and break it. I mean, when you're thinking at that time in the future, I mean, you don't need to get out of bed then.
Imagine what Google Glass will be like then.
Exactly.
You can see right through their cards.
Oh, I'm not feeling bad about these future space people. I'm sorry. But you go ahead. You feel bad for them.
Well, normally those are the shows that kind of spook me. I mean, I actually, one of the first columns I ever wrote for our magazine was when I had that poker vision. I wrote about poker on TV, and I talked about how that was the stuff that freaked me out, was these big... asteroids coming here in 2038 or something. And so I thought, hey, you know what? There's Morgan Freeman. He's hosting a show on here. He did March for the Penguins or March with the Penguins or whatever. I mean, how scary could this show be through the wormhole?
Very calming influence.
I trust Morgan Freeman, so let me watch Through the Wormhole. And sure enough, the first segment scares the hell out of me, but not as like I'm worried, you know, for my life. I'm just worried for my bankroll. They have this guy on. They're talking about like tapping into people's minds and trying to like hack their minds. If you can hack a computer, there are people out there who can hack your mind. And so the first guy they call up, he does this sort of show on stage for people, and he reminds them all. He's like, hey, there's just no trickery, there's no hypnosis, no plants, nothing like that. Nobody's planted in the audience. This is strictly me picking up nonverbal information from the people that I'm dealing with. And he gets this woman on stage, and she has a book, and she looks at the book, opens it randomly to a page, and he says to her, okay, I'm going to look at you, and I'm going to know what the first word of that page is. And she's like, yeah, all right, go ahead. And then he starts looking at her and talking to her, and he starts like doing the alphabet in front of her, and then he watches her reaction when he gets to the first letter, and then he says, traditionally, this letter is next to this letter, so is it this letter? And then he watches her, and then he finally says, and the first word is, and it was something like store or something. And she's like, you're right! And they turn around and show him, and he's like, thank you very much, and I want to remind you that none of this is fake, none of this, you know. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. I said, I can totally tell that this is going to go to poker next. I just know it's going to poker. Sure enough, they do their little fade transition to an octagonal poker table with plastic chips and guys playing with, you know, old cards.
And you think when the MMA starts a poker tour, it's going to be an octagonal?
Octagonal. Five men enter, one comes. So he gets them, and he's like, these are called nonverbal tells. And I'm like, oh my God, where's Joe Navarro? You know, so he deals them all one card, and he looks at the guy, and he's like, all right, I'm going to tell what your card is. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, jack, queen, Jack. Okay, your eyes moved when I said Jack. Jack. Okay. Is it red or black? Red or black? Red or black? Oh, I see that it's black. It's black. I can tell it's black. Is it spade or club? Spade or club? And I'm just like, I'm mesmerized by this guy. And the other guy, now, of course, the face of the non-poker guy that they probably brought one of the crew's family members in for this skit, but his face looked like a Jiffy Pop popcorn bag. It was just full of emotion. Awesome. Every time the guy like said something like close to the card he was holding, his eyes started flittering and his blinking and his started licking his lips. And but sure enough, the guy guessed his card identical to what it was. It wasn't like Jack of Spades and it was Jack. I mean, he guessed it was the Jack of Clubs and it was the Jack of Clubs or whatever. And he did that with like everybody at the table. Now, they didn't show all of that, but they, in the voiceovers and stuff, they made it say it's, or seem that he did guess all of their cards by just what they were conveying to him non-verbally. And I thought to myself, oh man, we are screwed. This guy ever plays poker, or if anybody learns to do this sort of heads-up talk, we are screwed. I mean, really, I mean, he's going to be like, your first card's a jack, a king, a queen. Oh, your first card's a king. Okay, and by the time he gets to our, he's going to know our exact holding, and he can just bet accordingly. And then I started to take some rational thought, which is what they profess on Science Channel. Rational thought. And I thought to myself, okay, well, first of all, if you get heads-up with this guy, they're never going to let him talk to you like that.
Except with the World Series.
But you can call a clock on him. It took him a good long time to do it. Three, our good friends at Blue Shark Optics will take care of most of this because most of the stuff this guy was getting from these bags of water was blinking eyes, and they weren't real poker players. So I was okay when I started to think about Joe Navarro and how to hide tells and thinking of Blue Shark Optics and how to hide the eyes if you have to. So if these people actually start to evolve onto the poker scene, I think we'll be okay. But I have to tell you, I was scared, and I never thought I was going to be scared by that on the Science Channel. I mean, really, it was absolutely crazy to me. This guy guessed the exact card the guy was holding, and then worked his way around the table and guessed all of their, but it was only one card. He dealt him one card. So I was like, oh yeah, well, try doing it five card draw, buddy. You know?
All right, get your first card.
Oh, yeah. Got one card. We'll be there 6 hours. Every tournament will last, you know, or at least you won't have to make you'll have like three hands an hour. You know?
Like trying to get the tumblers on Die Hard.
Yes, exactly. I present the FBI. But really, though, I mean, to me, if this guy was allowed to just do whatever he wanted at a poker table and there were no such things as clocks and dealers looking to get, you know, 30 hands an hour because they need the money, we could literally see like three hands an hour and this guy would be the best poker player in the world.
Hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, my first thought is that you lost 75% of our audience by mentioning Jiffy Pop. So, thanks for that.
Oh, come on.
So, the 25 geezers like us that are still listening to the show now.
They still sell that Jiffy Pop.
This stuff is all... This is all the smoke and mirrors crap, I think. Right? I haven't watched it. I'm sure this guy is really good at what he's doing. But you're right. He probably brought on some kind of easy mark to do this. You get somebody tough, not us, somebody tough poker player on there. I wonder if he has the same success.
Yeah, let him try it against Phil Ivey.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it was kind of scary.
Great suggestion because Phil Ivey doesn't wear sunglasses, so.
Yeah, but I mean, it was kind of scary thinking that, you know, people do give off these nonverbal tells that Joe has been professing for years. And if he was able to talk like this at the table to everyone... Obviously, he can't do that. That's his biggest problem, is that once he plays three-handed, he has to keep his mouth shut. But when he gets heads-up, he can be the best heads-up player ever.
But let me ask you this, because maybe he doesn't have to, like... Do you have a 9, 10, jack, queen, queen? For the guy, he can just, like, randomly throw out cards, you know, like he's thinking about calling, and he's like, jacks. Jacks. Jacks? Because really, if he's a good poker player, he's nearer to down. He doesn't need to figure out the exact cards by running through the entire deck.
That's true.
Get an idea of whether you're holding the one or two card combinations that have him beat. You're like, Jax is making a queen. Queen?
Oh, man.
See, so, you know, we can work with this guy. I think we can get him on Team Annie up here.
Yeah, we got to teach him how to play poker first, because obviously he's not going to be a good poker player, but he's going to be a good reader, so we need to pump up his poker skills and then off to the races, man. I think this guy could bring in some serious money. He'll be like some supplement income for Annie Up. We'll back him. We're going to get into backing in a few minutes, so I thought maybe that'd be a nice little segue, but...
I feel like that Seinfeld episode, where she's not a carnival game. Lip reader.
Yeah. Sweep! Not sleep! Sweep! Well, anyway, that was my scare of the week, so...
If I get well, you know, the guy would do really well at the World Series, right? Because we talked about...
You can talk there, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and maybe if we get him all trained next year, he can play the main event and get those numbers back up, because the main event's going on now. Closed for registration now. We're getting ready to go into day three, I think, here pretty soon. And 6,352 people plunked down to $10,000 this year. That's down ever so slightly from 6,598 last year. However, total entries at the World Series this year set a record with 79,471, about 4,000 more than 2 years ago, which was the previous record. And Doyle Brunson was one of the main event players this year.
I knew he would crack. He can't let the World Series main event go by. He just can't do it. But let's go back to the numbers here. I would say that statistically that they had the same amount of players there from a,
yes, exactly.
From a main event thing. That's a...
In the margin of error, right?
Margin of error, exactly. Plus or minus whatever. So that makes sense to me, because really, yeah, we had this sort of, okay, Ultimate Poker is on the scene now, and but really online poker still is in the same state that it was as far as offering these seats and stuff. So there's no real surprise here. And I'm really not surprised by the record entries either, because like you mentioned way back, the re-entry thing, to me, that doesn't really... that now these numbers will never be the same. It's kind of like when, you know, the home run record was broken. You know, Well, they played 162 games now instead of 150, whatever it was, 151 or whatever, whatever it was back when Babe Ruth's... You know what I mean? So there's always going to be, in my mind, this sort of asterisk to the total number of players in this field, or not in the field, but in the series now, because... those re-entries, that doesn't mean the same thing. It's not people, it's entries.
True, but we are always usually looking year over year, so, I mean, it will be a good comparison next year.
It would be, yeah, but what I mean is, like, it's almost like there needs to be two sets of records now, before re-entry and after re-entry, you know?
True.
BR and ABR.
I'm also not sure this is a record that anybody really keeps or cares about, right?
No, you're absolutely
right. It's not like I'm going to play my $19 to go to the Branson and get his World Records Museum. And why do they not have the World Series entry thing here?
No, but it's just they're always eternally spinning things. And I'm trying to call them out as a journalist. I'm not really sure that's true. But and it's still healthy, though, and that's good news.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Next year will be shocking if this number, main event number, isn't bigger. Or actually, all these numbers aren't bigger, to be honest, because obviously Ultimate's been dealing now, but the WSOP.com's money site should be launching this summer sometime.
Yeah, this summer, right.
And a number of other Nevada sites will be up and running. It sounds like New Jersey's going to launch at the end of November. And they said it's possible that Delaware will launch at the end of September. Though that's probably a soft number, I think, or soft date right now.
Right.
So, but regardless, we're going to have three states with multiple sites dealing online poker next year. And at least in two of them, you've got a heavy World Series contingent there that are going to be running satellites for it. So not entirely sure whether these other sites are going to be running World Series satellites, but definitely the WSOP in both New Jersey and Nevada will. So that's sure to increase the numbers to some amount. But I don't know how many. I've been thinking of this. I don't know really. It's hard to say now because we don't know how many sites are going to be running. But what they're going to be doing. But I got to think at least an uptick of maybe, 1,000 people in the main event, maybe?
That could be a good guess. Plus the fact that there's more money now being won while people are sitting in their homes rather than making the trek to the room. So there's going to be bigger bankrolls and people can take their bankroll to the World Series and buy
into.
So, combine those two things. Yeah, that might be a good guess. Let's go with 7,600 next year.
7,600. Locked in.
One more thing on the numbers before we move on, I guess. The 4,000 more than 2 years ago, how many events are there more this year than 4 years ago, too? Or 2 years ago, I mean.
2 years ago. I don't think there's a ton. Maybe a couple.
Right. So let's say it's 58 to 62 or 59. Yeah. You know, two or three events, they average 1,000 people event easy.
That's true, too.
You know what I mean?
That's...
So really, the numbers are just not... It's not right. If we had 75 events, you know what I mean? We'd have 100,000 people. That doesn't break the record. You'd have more. It should be like an average. The average is, you know what I mean? Average per event.
But again, it's not a real record.
No, so. I know. But you know
what
I mean.
We'll let them crow.
Let them skew a little bit. That's fine.
What I want to know is how many people paid $4.25 for a bottle of soda. Well, that's leveling off every year.
Remember, every time you play, they give you that warm bottle of water. Isn't that so nice of the Rio?
Well, what I thought was funny is the other day is when I was out there at the series, you know, and I got upset about paying $4.25 for the soda, which I only did twice this year, which is a huge growth on my part. Right?
Yeah, very good.
So then I kind of walked back through the kitchen again, just thinking maybe they put something on sale. You know, I know how hilarious that sounds, right? And I looked in there, and I saw one of these, you know, these little Starbucks Frappuccino things in the glass, you know.
Yeah.
Right next to the overpriced soda, and I'm like, and that was $5. And I'm like, why would I ever think about getting the soda for $4.25 when I can get this yummy Starbucks concoction for 75 cents more? Aside from the fact that it's 209 calories more. But I went and grabbed one, and I thought that was to steal the World Series, right? And then I was walking by another vending machine the other day, $2 for those. So I still got robbed on them. But I feel like I got robbed less.
Robbed less, that's right. You always see the silver lining, Scott. Good for you.
And really what I need is some macroeconomic people to figure out how much I'm getting screwed on these different beverages, I think, right?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I came back before that happened because there was a combination microeconomics poker analytics conference at the Bellagio just before the World Series of Poker main event. It featured famed political Nostradamus poker player Nate Silver. And they talked about Wall Street and macroeconomics, but they also did a main event poker training class because a lot of these people that attended this went and played the main event the next day. So the first question I have out of this is this more proof that poker and stock investing are similar, that we are having combination conferences now?
I believe it is similar in the sort of decision-making and personalities that are needed to succeed in both. I don't know about the actual approach to things, but... Nate Silver, he's the one that predicted all the elections that time.
Yes, he's a god above gods.
I remember they were interviewing him on like MSNBC or something in the background. You could see Super System and all of the poker books in the background next to all of his other, you know, political books and stuff. Yeah, I remember that guy now. And so anyway, yeah, I do think that they're very similar. And this is not a new thing either. We've talked about this before. And even back when we used to have the show at the Times and we had the Jets on the show,
yes,
they were getting interviewed that week. That was what, 8 years ago, 7 years ago. They were getting interviewed back then for the exact same kind of thing, a story about the similarities between stocks and poker. And so it's definitely you can't keep talking about it 8 years later and not have it be something that's very similar or correlated. So
right, just kind of amazing that they have this.
It is, and that
you imagine that you get done talking about day trading and then, all right, next session, World Series of Poker.
That is pretty funny.
But another thing I thought was interesting in this, and perhaps it's quite possible I misunderstood this, but they did talk about backing players and the fact that they were trying to sell short, obviously a good Wall Street term, on poker players. Found out that wasn't legal, so they're trying to figure out another way to make the market purer, is what they're saying. And I love this whole concept of, you know, people trying to get backers, and there's a ton of people. Now that you're on Facebook, I mean... And I've got so many poker players, amateurs, and pros that are my Facebook friends that every day before the main event, it's like selling pieces of me and doing crazy percentages and things like that. And really, I think what these guys are saying is if you're able to invest in a player, which is really what you're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to sell short on a player and know, hey, this guy isn't as good as he thinks he is, so I'm going to bet against him. What do you think about that?
All right, so...
I mean, obviously, you're not going to do that on a Facebook page. You're like, hey, I'll take the opposite in case you lose and you owe me money. That's not going to happen. But I think what they're trying to do is... I always thought it'd be interesting to set up a market, you know, rather than have people poker players walking around table to table with a cup out, you know, trying to get donations.
Right.
you know, you put up or shut up. You put yourself on this market, and people anonymously, if they believe in you, they're going to give you a good price for your stake, and if not, they're going to make you pay for your stake.
But once they've paid, I don't understand how they can sell short. You know, are they going to bet with casinos on how you're going to do against you to get their money back?
Sell short's probably my word there, I think. Yeah. I mean, I guess what I think might... And I don't. Again, I don't know exactly how these guys were doing, but what I would think would happen is that, you know, right now you're paying. You know, I give you $100, I get, you know, what, 1% of your action, unless you're doing some kind of markup or something.
Right.
I think you should be able to, if a player's not so good, they don't get that full 1% towards their buy-in. You know, if I give them $100, I get, let's say, 10% of what they win. So you can only sell so much of yourself at that point. So at that point, you got to prove yourself.
Mm. That sounds a little...
If you prove yourself, then if there's so much demand for you, let's say, like, you know, Antonio Esfandiari in the next charity event he plays in, you know, people are going to overpay to be a piece of get a piece of him, aren't they?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I feel like there are some...
It's a true market at that point.
Oh, man. Or not. I don't know.
Or not.
It seems weird to me that, because then it's based on opinion. How do you know how well this guy's doing?
No, it's not based on opinion. Right? It's based on market. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. But if you go back to the stock market, it's all based on opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
If I decide to buy stock in Disney, then it's because my opinion is that stock's going to go up. Or if I'm going to sell short on Disney, it's my opinion that it's going to go down.
Right.
And ultimately, the market works because of what. It collects everybody's opinion, and that's where you get the true market from.
Well, here's my problem with that. When you invest in a company, because I don't know if we're trying to keep this as literal as possible or not, but I mean, when you invest in a company, you buy a stock, your initial investment is all you pay, and that's it. And then you get in or you get out, and then you get the percentage of what the value is. There's no value set on this person. So if you get out, how do you determine the value of that player, and who determines that value?
Right, yeah. It's sell short's probably the wrong word to throw at.
No, I know, but I'm still kind of confused as to how people would get out of their arrangement or get money or change percentages or something. It's just based on money.
I think it's just a market on your worth as a player.
Yeah, that's so weird. That's a concept that I just can't.
I mean, because here's the thing: the way it works now is you put it on Facebook, let's say, and I'm selling, you know, $100 shares to me and. Hopefully you get, 100 people,
right?
100 people and pays for your entire main event, right?
Right.
But chances are you're not going to get 100 people. So whatever let's say you get 50, then you gotta punk in 5,000 yourself, right?
Right.
And I'm not sure anybody would sell their whole selves. I mean, this whole thing is really complicated. I'm trying to keep it simple for this purpose.
Right.
But this would be a way for you to open yourself up to people that don't know you, put yourself on the market, and you decide how much money you want to put in on yourself, you know?
Uh-huh.
So if you want to play the whole thing, you don't want to pay a dime to play in the main event, you know, people are going to check out your Hendon Mom page, and they look at mine, they're going to go, no, I'm going to get a bigger share of your winnings than I'm willing to put in because you suck, Scott. You've only won one horse tournament in your entire life.
So in other words, you have to... I would think for that to work, you couldn't sell your entire percentage because it can't add up to more than 100 unless you're putting that money in yourself, then you can't actually make money as the player. The player will get screwed unless he – because you'd be paying them out of his own half then if you did it 50-50, let's say.
It'd be different. I think you're missing the ultimate point is that, you know, should it be a straight invest in you? Let's say – Phil Ivey is offering a 1% share for $100, and Scott Long's offering a 1% share for $100 in a World Series main event. Who are you going to give $100 to?
Right. You're going to give it to Ivey, right?
Really?
Me?
You've been in business 5 years. Well, you trust in me? Hurt. But no, that's the point, right? Exactly. So what this is, it's equalizing players. So... you know, knowing that everybody's going to want to put their money in Ivy, for me to attract funds, I'm going to have to offer people a better deal than Phil Ivy's offering.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
And I understand that. I just say, but the only way to make it better is if you... There's no way you could sell 100% of yourself that way. You'd have to keep back some of your own to pay these people off. And then as a player, how
in
do you make
sense,
money?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, exactly. You're right.
And then I don't
Whereas
know how people
the
make
opposite
money.
Is Phil Ivey could probably pay for play for free and
right.
still make enough money. Because,
yeah.
you know, because people are going to be willing to, you know, invest more for less of a return because it's a better chance of return, right?
So then does that also eliminate the usual arrangement where somebody pays for you and they, you pay them back first and then you split the money? Because then, you know what I mean? It's kind of a... There's
yeah,
all these
think,
new rules that have to get
introduced. Well, I think what you're doing is you're making this an anonymous, easy investment kind of thing. You know, so you don't get into these... Again, you'd have to have a third party that manages this market. It has all the contracts and all that stuff. All that money, I think, would have to be handled by a third party somehow, you know. So you
right.
get into all that so you know exactly... It's just like a prospectus, right? You
right.
know, you know exactly, you know, what you're getting back, you know, whether the person has to take out taxes and whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And everybody would have to play by the same rules on that. But, you know, you could eventually, I think it's a good way because, you know, here's the thing. If I, at some point in my life, I'm going to take a stab at the main event, I think.
You
right?
think?
I think at some point.
Okay.
I can't tell you when or well, but,
wow.
you know.
I never thought you would.
Well, I mean, I let's say I want to, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, I might get crazy and, you know, if I'm going to do it, I might as well try to do it for less than $10,000, right?
Right. And I understand that. And I guess you're just, at that point, doing
and
it
I
to hope
right
to hit
now,
big.
I'm not comfortable going on Facebook and asking my friends to... There would be probably tons of friends, my relatives and stuff, that think I'm this awesome poker player that don't really understand that I'm not. You know, that would be willing to give me some money. But then that would be a lot of pressure, right?
No, it would be.
But if it's all anonymous, if a bunch of people invested in me that I don't know...
Hmm.
There's less pressure on me, right?
Hmm.
And I get to play for a little bit less, and obviously win a little bit less.
Yeah, there are a lot of variables in there. A lot of intangible things that you have to think about. Plus the fact that you know when people invest in companies, and I'm not trying to make it the same analogy again, but I'm just saying when you invest in companies, there are quarterly reports that you look at. There is probably you know all these signs, things that you know about that are coming up in the future that they're going to need to spend their money on to you know make money for you. Whereas anonymous poker player, it's going to be difficult to raise any kind of money that way too anonymously. If
well,
you're
anonymously,
a terrible
you're going to be player. Like you're going to be like a pink sheet sock. You know, there's
yeah.
going to be a bunch of people that are going to spread their money around a bunch of unknowns. I mean, think about it. How many times have quote-unquote unknown won the main event lately.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, you might as well do some shotgun approach. If you know you're not giving them a dollar for a dollar, you're giving them a dollar for $100, you know, you're going to bet the field. And, you know, it's all part of the research. But, you know, ultimately somebody might decide that they want to put all their money on Gus Hansen, you know, because he's established.
Do you feel like this now commits you to having to play no matter what? How many investors you get, or is it something where you don't
oh, yeah,
have to worry about
it? Oh, yeah, I think you'd
it.
Have to go in. Yeah, I think that would have to be part of the plan, I would think.
That would suck if you had 10 grand and had to pay like 9,900 because you only got one investor or something.
Yeah, well,
you have to defeat the purpose. So.
It's part of the deal, I guess.
Oh, man, pretty scary stuff. Pretty scary stuff. Well, you do that, Scott. You let me know how it goes.
Alright, well, you know, the other thing I'm very excited about is our Antioch Cruises, and it's our time now for the commercial part of our show, which we've gotten away from.
Yes, yes.
But when we have exciting stuff to talk about Antioch, we will. And, you know, a couple weeks ago I mentioned Open-Faced Chinese just taking over the world, right, out there?
Yep.
And so I spent a lot of time when I was out there talking to our poker cruise manager, and I'm like, we got to find a way to get Open-Faced Chinese on our ship. And because people just are craving to play this, and he came up with a very good idea. Let's do a shootout tournament, so it won't take necessarily too long, but people get to play it and have fun. So we all agreed. We thought this was a great way to do it, and if it takes off, we can do a couple more of these. I mean, we're not bound to just doing one per cruise, but so we're going to do these on our remaining 2013 cruises, which again, October 20th out of the New York City metro area going to Bermuda. And that cruise also has our Antioch team tournament,
yep.
which we announced earlier. So the winning team is going to be on the cover of the magazine. So lots of good stuff to do on that cruise. And then, of course, we're also going to do this on our December 2nd cruise out of Tampa that goes to Grand Cayman and Cozumel. And this morning, I'm expecting our contracts for our 2014 cruise schedule. So tune in next week, hopefully, and we'll give you a lot more details on this. But we are planning our first cruise out of Los Angeles, our first summer cruise for all those folks with kids or teachers. Mm-hmm. That should make people some happy. That's going to be out of Orlando, so they can go down there and pay homage to the rat before they come play poker with us, right? Mm-hmm. Our very first cruise out of Galveston, Texas, which is going to be a lot of fun. We'll be out of Tampa again, as always. That's what we like, because we don't like to roll out of bed and on the cruise ship.
Pretty much you got to walk there.
And then this one's very different, a transatlantic cruise from Fort Lauderdale to Southampton, England, which, by the way, is where the Titanic left from.
Oh, man. Good thing we're going there, not leaving from there.
Exactly. Very important. I didn't know that, but I learned that in terms of this. So five cruises next year. So tune in next week for all those details, or if you're not already signed up for our e-newsletter, it'll be going out probably before then. And don't forget to come on our next two cruises, play some Open Age Chinese with us. I'm pretty sure that Chris Cosenza will not be playing.
That's right. I'll be standing behind Scott going, no, not there. Why are you putting it there? Because I won't play, but I'll tell you how.
After, of course, I place my card, right?
Oh, yeah, no.
One player.
We wouldn't be colluding or any of that. Hey, listen, you know, every week we have a listener spotlight, and anybody who calls our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, we take their little comment or segment or question and put it on the show, and if we do, we'll give you something really cool if you haven't won anything in the past year. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, the creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app from Apple Products. I have it. I love it. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. This comes from Terry in Fort Walton Beach, right here in Florida. He says, I was watching the One Drop live stream. It almost pained me to see Antonius Fondiari make the final table again. First he won $18 million, now he has a chance to have $4.9 million. I've never really been a big fan of his simply because of the way he used to rag on Phil Hellmuth. TV personalities are so reverse from who most people truly are in real life. I wouldn't be too surprised if I ever had a chance to meet Phil in real life. He might act like a total douchebag toward me, while Antonio might actually be a cool guy. But anyway, I was wondering if it would be safe to go ahead and crown Antonio the Robert Ori of poker, simply because he might not cash in lower-level tournaments, but he definitely shows up and hits all the threes in the big ones. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I love his twist of phrases there at the end, too. Very.
And one of the things that I'd like to comment on is that if you don't like Antonio Esfandiari from what you've seen on TV, then I think you're actually proving your own prophecy here in that you're saying, hey, people aren't what they are like on TV. So if you don't like who Antonio is on TV for ragging on Phil Hellmuth, they have this little rivalry going as a joke, then maybe he's not really like that in real life and you like him. I mean, I was the same way when I first watched Antonio. I was kind of like, what the hell? Why is he so cocky? Blah, blah, blah. And then every time we've met him, he's been unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that you have any, you know, that you shouldn't, you don't have the right to not like anyone or whatever. That's fine, whatever you want to do. But the simple fact that what you're seeing is only on TV, you've never met him, and you're saying that what you see on TV isn't what they are, then by that logic, A plus B equals C. So whatever those transitive properties were in algebra, I would think that you have to reserve judgment on Antonio as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll say a couple things. One, I have learned being in this business, and I'm not just picking on poker players, I'm sure it's like this with all TV celebrities of some sort, that very few people are in real life what they are on TV. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I've been disappointed more than I've been impressed, and that's pretty sad, I think. So, you know, again, this actually came up at the Poker TDA, you know, where they talked about this, you know, the controversy over the allowing the talk at the World Series. And I don't know if I mentioned this on that show, but one of the things that the tournament director said is these people that like to talk a lot, Daniel Negreanu, Phil Hellmuth, never do this when the camera isn't on. They rise to the occasion on TV. They know that people are watching this. They know that people want to be entertained. So that's why they kind of do this stuff. But if the camera's not on, then they don't feel a need to. So, and that's good or bad. I mean, you know, you never want anybody to feel like they're fake. But right. At the same time, I get this. They understand that, you know, their future earnings come from poker being popular. And poker gets popular from being interesting to watch on TV. Right. So in a lot of ways, they're, you know, whether this persona is fake or not, they're helping grow the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you with the whole after you meet them, it's not what you think it is. Which I think is probably true in everything. True with Hollywood.
Yeah, and it's hard to live up to that, I think, you know.
I know when people meet you after liking the show, they think you're really cool, and then they meet you, they're like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Why do I listen to this show? That's probably why our numbers are way down. We get, like, 5 listeners now. Because they actually, you go out too often, travel, and meet all these listeners, and then when they meet you, our numbers go down. It's like, why are we doing these meetups? We're destroying the show.
But I will say this, he's right. Antonio does hit all the threes in the big ones.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, on fire in those things. So, and I wonder if it, you wouldn't think this would happen, but I wonder if people gave him too much credit going into this, the little drop, or the droplet, as they call
the
it.
Droplet.
Well, actually, no. The droplet was the next one.
That was the 1,000 one, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, hey, Antonio won last year. He's obviously good at this. Maybe I'll steer clear of him. Not to say you wouldn't anyhow, because he's a phenomenal player, but I wonder if he got a little credit in this event.
Sure. That's my rant. It's very possible. And like we said last week, too, or before, that he's got all the experience now with playing for this kind of pressure and money and everything. So, yeah, I think absolutely. I think that people did give him some credit for things and, you know, whatever, and that's why he's successful. But, again, just don't judge a book by its cover, even though you might be right anyway.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Bum, bum, bum. Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. And if we use it on the show and you haven't won anything in the past year, we'll send you something awesome. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. Check out J-Design's great cards and more in the Antiup store at antiupmagazine.com/shop. And this comes from Scott Rogeville. And he says, I was playing in a $1, $2 no-limit cash game at a Delaware casino. The hand plays out with two opponents, heads up, going to the river. And player A, back in the game again, who was first to act on the river, bets $55. Player B then grabs two stacks of red $5 chips and pushes them out together. It is fairly apparent that while close to being 22 red chips, these stacks did not quite look like they were equal or exceeded $110, and thus a full raise. The dealer initially says that this is a call, and then before counting out the chips, he calls the floor for a ruling. The floor arrives, and the chip count is confirmed at $105, and she deems the amount to be a raise and requires player B to complete the raise by adding one more red chip to bring his raise to $110. She says that the basis for her ruling is player B clearly intended to raise. My issue here is it seemed odd to me that the floor was interpreting player's intent as opposed to making him responsible for his actions. He did not verbalize a raise, and he did not count out a sufficient number of chips to establish a raise, but she knew what he was thinking regardless. Also, after she made a ruling, she asked player B if he intended a raise, which in his broken English he confirmed. Was this the correct ruling?
Jody says, once the player puts in half or more of a raise, but not an amount of a full raise, that player is obligated to complete the minimum raise. The raise must be the minimum amount, not more. And I don't see any problem with any of this, to be honest with you. Especially, it would be one thing if it was a single chip.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you're confused because you don't know if it's a call or a raise because a single chip does more than the value. But when you're stacking out more than one stack, and it's more than half the amount of the raise, you know, one and a half or whatever, it's a raise. I mean, to me, and I think this person made the exact ruling, the correct ruling. I don't know why the dealer said it was a call.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to me at all. You're putting out two stacks that are clearly more than 50 or 100, what, $55, and it's clearly more than one and a half that. The guy obviously thought he put out enough money for a raise. I mean, it makes no sense to me that the dealer would say call there.
Yeah, what I wrote back to Scott on this is I think every tournament director wishes this was the call of the floor that they get called over.
Yeah.
Because seriously, there's absolutely no question in this one. There's no room for error here. He put out more chips than he needed to, and it was more than half, so it's compelled to a raise, and that means he has to complete it, and as Jody says, it has to be the minimum. He can't go, oh, I'm raising now, and put 400 out there. It has to be 110. This is as easy as it gets.
Yep.
Absolutely as easy as it gets. Almost all the other call of floors, there's some gray area in there that gets our socks all bodded up. But not this one. This one was too easy.
All right, that was simple. Hey, we get to start a brand new O'Malley's Move. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, No Limit Hold'em cash game. This is a surprisingly tight table, and there have been plenty of chops when it gets to the blinds. In this case, we are in the small blind, and have lost 100. We sit with 4. It gets folded all the way around to us, and we look down at the King of Hearts, King of Clubs. Ugh. Our etiquette dictates that we ask for a chop, so we do. The big blind looks at his cards and then gruffly responds, "I don't chop." Okay. This guy is a maniac at the table, and could really have any two cards. He sits with 300. We kind of wanted to play this hand anyway. We make it $6 to go, which he raises to 18. We repop him to 40, and he calls. With 360 left and $80 in the pot, the flop comes down the Queen of Spades, 3 of Spades, Deuce of Diamonds. This is a decent flop. We don't like the spades, but other than that, this couldn't have hit him hard enough for us to worry about being beat. We bet $50. Our opponent counts out what looks to be a raise, thinks for a minute, says, "Your third raise preflop is either aces or kings, but I have to call." What does that mean? There's 180 in the pot, and the turn is the 7 of spades. It's on us. What are we doing here? And if we check and he bets, then what? Call? Raise? What if we bet and get raised? What are we going to do?
It's time for Hand of the Week.
Yay!
Send your actually, it's Situation
oh, no.
this week. But send your hands or situations to podcast@ntfmagazine.com. And if we use it on the show and you haven't won anything the past year, we'll send you something awesome. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. And ask about the AntiUp logo version and use code AntiUp for free shipping.
Cool.
All right, so we got an Aces Crack situation this week, Chris, from our good friend Carlos down in Texas.
Okay.
And let's see what Carlos had to say. He says he was playing 3-6 limit at the Kickapoo Lucky Eagle Casino on the 4th of July, which is the only legal casino in Texas right now.
Okay.
Right there on the El Paso border, I believe. I bought in for 120. I've been up and down to this point. And as he mentioned, they were running an Aces Crack promotion this day. So I'm just going to read through this whole thing. There's a couple hands here, and then we can talk about the whole Aces Cracked and how we handled that situation, right?
Okay.
And, of course, he is everywhere. He says, if you hold pocket aces and your hand gets... I had aces twice during the session. The first time I had ace-ace, I flopped a set, but there were 4 diamonds on the board by the river. I wasn't aware of the promotion, so I bet out. And a hand on the flop. I ended up winning a fairly large pot. The turn brought a 3rd diamond. The river brought a 4th diamond. By the river, I was heads up and went check, check. I won a respectable pot, squiggly $50, against an opponent who flopped a set of 6s. I'd been playing for 2 hours and had become familiar with those players when I got the 2nd pocket aces. The hand in question went like this. I was at a fold table with a lot of players who were limping pre-flop. I got dealt ace of clubs, ace of spades, and the cutoff. There were 4 callers when the action comes to me. I limp, not wanting to bet anyone out, hoping to get my aces cracked. The button calls, along with the small blind and the big blind. The situation seems ideal to get my aces cracked. 7 players limped in, including me. Wow. Flop comes 4 of hearts, 7 of diamonds, 7 of clubs, and the action checks around to me, and I check, hoping someone is slow playing a 7. The turn comes the ace of diamonds, and once again, the action checks around to me. Seeing the diamond draw and knowing that most likely my boat will not be beat, I decided to bet out in an effort to build a pot and get called by the diamond draw or a random 7. At this point, I realize I'm most likely not going to win the Aces Crack promotion, as my hand is nearly unbeatable. I bet in a strong manner, showing strength in the effort to send a reverse tell. I slammed a $6 bet onto the felt. In other words, I was acting strong like a fish hoping someone would read in his weakness, perhaps leveling myself. Unfortunately, everyone folded my $6 bet, and I dragged a small pot of $18. I showed my cards, and the player in the small blind immediately criticized me for betting the turn, saying that I wanted as many players in that pot so I could win the Aces Crack promotion. I said that unless someone had exactly 7 of hearts, 7 of diamonds, I wasn't losing, or someone with 7x who hits a 7 on the river. He dismissed my point and said I didn't understand. The dealer even chimed in that I wasn't losing that pot. I think I played it right. I made an effort to build a pot when I was pretty sure I wasn't going to collect $100 for aces, crack. I ended the session when my fiance was done at the slot machines. $200 win for her. Woohoo! I left $2 down and felt that I got my money's worth of entertainment. What do you guys think?
Okay, well, the first hand, pretty routine. I don't see any really way you're going to change how to play that one. But the second one, I think I still checked the turn.
Do you?
Here's why. Yeah, you're probably not going to get any more money on it, anyone. You have the deck crippled. The only hand that calls you is 7x, 7-4, or even possibly 7-ace, and or 7-7. And so if those hands are there, you're gonna get called. The odds of those hands versus what's not out there is not very good. I would have probably waited to the river to bet, because that way the river might let somebody catch up to something else. Somebody has 5-6, they can make a straight. Somebody could make the diamonds. You might get into some sort of betting thing, because if you didn't bet the turn, then they're going to think, what could you possibly have on the river? Hmm. You know what I mean? What if somebody had queen-queen, and now you scared them off, but a queen could come on the river? You know, I'm not saying that's what happened, because everybody limped, but I'm just trying to find hands that you could actually get money out of on the river, whereas there are very few hands you're going to get money out of on the turn now, unless they have a 7. And I don't know where we were in position, so I don't know if a lot of checks came to him or if he bet up first.
We were in the cutoff.
All right, so if there's 7 people in this hand, you got a bunch of checks already. How many people left are going to have a 7 in their hand right behind you at that point? So I might check one more time just to see if I can give them one more. I have this deck crippled, and the only hand I'm losing to is 7-7, and we want to lose to that hand. So we get the $100 instead of what appears to be 30. Yeah, so why bet? If you're free rolling, why bet there? You're not going to get any money. You know, you're going to get some money anyway. You know you're going to lose his hand. But if you did lose to the miracle, betting now, I mean, yeah, 7-7. But it could also be a random 7, and we don't know if that river 7 comes. You know what I mean? It could be 3 sevens on the river, and somebody has a 7 in their hand. You know, and they have quads that way. So you've got to give them a chance to make quads, too, so you can lose. There's no way to lose here if you bet and everybody folds. You know, if you get the 7 to fold, you never know. You don't know what that 7, you know, I don't think he would, but it could happen. You know, somebody could be either 7-3, could be beat. You know, who knows? So I'd like to at least go one more street, and then what the hell? I'll put 6 out, because clearly when you put 6 out, you didn't get any money anyway. So why not wait one more street? Let somebody improve to something that they think you could be bluffing at, and get at least $6 more out of someone, or maybe 12 or whatever.
Hmm. Interesting. I was going to play this completely differently than you.
Cool.
I would have actually bet the flop here.
Oh, you would have bet the flop.
And here's the reason, is that that flop, very likely, even with 7 limpers, probably didn't hit anyone. And I hope it did, but it probably didn't. So I think this kind of gets back to what Carlos was hinting at, is that, yes, in this promotion, particularly when the pods are an average of $50 or so, your best play is to get your aces cracked, right?
Right.
Because you're going to $100 for that. And to get it cracked by putting the least amount of money in the pot. Because if you put the money in the pot and your aces get cracked, you lose the pot. So you got to take whatever you put in the pot out of $100 for your total win on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then what gets tricky, though, is if you don't win, if you don't get your aces cracked, you win the pot, then you want to win as much money as you can, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I think makes these aces crack promotions so hard to play, because you're trying to put in as little money as possible to lose, or to put as much money as possible when you're going to win. And so it's a balancing act every time. So from my point of view, with the 4-7-7, and at that point it was a rainbow board too, there's just nothing going on there. So at this point, I'm kind of shutting down the idea that I'm going to lose this hand unless I'm up against quad sevens, right, or in this point a board, and if the action gets pretty heavy, then I know I can just slow down at that point. But if not, I'm pretty sure I'm going to win this hand. So at that point, I want to get as much value out of this hand as possible. So by betting there, it's unlikely that anybody has any of this stuff, so they're probably going to fold anyhow, and that's fine, whatever. And but if somebody does call or plays back at us, that's great, because now we know we got a live one on the hand, and we're either going to win the pot or we're going to win the ace is cracked. So as we said, we're free rolling. Though I guess free rolling is the wrong thing to say, because again, it goes back to the value of your hand. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to put too much in, or you don't want to put too little in. So you got to figure that out. So I probably would have bet the flop and then bet the turn. Probably would have won it on the flop, I'm guessing. And which is no different than what we happened here by winning on the turn, because no one put any money on that turn either. But at this point, you know, you're right. You crippled the deck. At this point, I'm trying to if I could squeeze out another $6 bet from someone, I'm going to do it. I think you're right. If no one has any of this stuff, they're going to fold anyhow. So why waste another street? I don't think anybody. You're right. It might be somebody that's going to believe that you're trying to take it down. It might give you $6, but they got to have something, right?
Right. Well, there's two diamonds now, too. So there's four.
That's true. It's possible.
5-6 could be out there in a limped pot. You know what I mean? Two diamonds. Who knows? Even deuce tray or something if it's suited. Who knows these idiots are doing in the blinds, too. So there are some things that get picked up on that turn, and they would think by the turn someone would have bet with a 7 if they had it in the other hand. So maybe you're stealing it because you're in the cutoff. I mean, there's all kinds of things that can go through their minds. I like what you're saying, too. I just think that if I'm putting 3 out there and somebody calls me, and then I put 6 out and they don't call me, then I've bet 9 and gotten 3, whereas if I don't bet, and then bet, I've only put out 6, and it's the same net same thing to me. It seems like it's the same thing.
Well, no, you pick up an extra $3 if you get somebody to call you on the flop.
Yeah.
Which isn't great, but again, we're playing limit, right? Yeah. Or are we playing limit? Yeah, we are playing limit.
Yeah, it's limit. Yeah, 3-6 limit.
So yeah, so again, the whole idea of limit is to, you know,
try to get money.
Win bets and not lose as many bets. So, I mean, that $3 is going to be valuable, particularly at a 3-6. That's going to be valuable in your overall, your day there, if you could squeeze that out of this hand versus doing nothing. What he did and bet on the turn and get nothing,
right,
you know?
Right.
But that's what makes it so tough. But I will say this. This guy in the small blind, I think, really does not understand what we're talking about here. And I love in Aces Crack promotions when these guys that have aces aren't active at all. You know, limp, call all the way down the river, and then hope they lose. And I think, on balance, if you play it that way all the time, you're giving up a ton more value than if you play those aces, for the most part, the way you normally would, knowing that you have this other insurance policy that you're working with.
Right, because you have to look into the statistics of how often aces would win against a certain amount of opponents and all that stuff. So it all balances out to how often, if you did nothing versus if you did something. How many most of the time, though, aces do have a hard time holding up against a bunch of people. So I think that he made the right move by not trying to scare them out. I mean, there could have been, to me, it felt like he had to at least wait till the turn. I know you didn't, because you're trying to get money out of it. But at the same time, I don't want to scare anybody out. Because what if you bet and you scare somebody out, and then they would have made the hand that beats you or something? You know, I don't know. I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen here. Yeah. But clearly, this is a board that. The other thing, too, is you said the board was at a 7 of diamonds on it. And then when you said the only thing that could beat me precisely is a 7 of diamonds and something else in their hand. So I want to make sure that it was a 7 of diamonds on the board, you know, because if it's a. If that might change things.
No, he said a diamond draw or a random 7.
Okay, all right. So
the turn is a diamond, so the diamonds would be out there. So that's the 7 of diamonds.
All right.
But I also think there's a huge difference in these aces crack promotions between a limit game and a no limit game.
Oh, sure.
You know, you're right. I can kind of justify this play on the small blind, playing it really passively in a limit game. And no limit, how many times do you get aces once every, 220 some hands, right?
Right.
And that's a big hand, no limit. And limit, it's tougher because you're right, you're going to get drawn out on too much. But so, I mean, if you are simply just calling $2 in a 1-2 no limit and checking the flop, and then, you know, you're losing so much more value in that game than you are in limit. So,
well, you got to remember the converse of that, too. People get it all in with somebody with aces and then lose 300 and get 100 back. There is the converse of that.
But it's also an insurance policy, though. You know?
Yeah, but only 100 on 300.
I mean, if you get it all in with 300, you're not hoping to win the 100. You're hoping to win 600 plus the pot, you know?
Oh, no, I know.
But that $100 is an insurance policy that if you're wrong or you get sucked out on, at least you're getting 100 back. So.
But you can't lose in limit hold'em. You can't lose money in limit hold'em. You can lose the value of the hand, but you can't actually come away with no money. No,
that's true.
Whereas you can come away a loser in no limit. So there's that huge factor there.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, yeah, they're completely two different ways of looking at it, but you got to understand the difference that you're in. So,
yeah,
it's tough to be too active with seven people in this pot. But here's the other thing too: how many times, and I know you don't play a ton of Limit, but you do in tournaments, that you make a bet pre-flop. How many people are you going to get out? Let's say you're on the button and there's already four or five people in. None of those people are going to fold in Limit. No. None of them are.
No.
So you're building that pot up. I mean, obviously, you're putting in an extra $3 and you're hoping to lose, which goes counter to what I'm talking about. But at that point, there's so much about the hand that hasn't played out yet. So I'm willing to put that $3 in, get another 15 or 18 or 21 in the pot, knowing that now. And then on the flop, if it gets really dangerous, then I can slow down at that point and know. I mean, that $3 is worth it for me to put in. Until I see that there's a good chance that I might get beat. Because if I don't get beat, it's the earlier you bet in the hand and Limit is when you make your money.
Yeah.
When people still think they have hope.
They have a hope.
And pre-flop, everybody thinks that they're going to flop quads. On flop, everybody still thinks they're going to get that flush. You know, on the turn, everybody still thinks they're going to boat up. And the river, everyone misses anything, no one's putting another dollar in that pot.
Yeah.
So you got to get those bets in early.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. You're right, though. I just felt like, yeah, you could get money out in the beginning. I guess it's just that it is far-fetched for them to make a hand that would crush you. You can only lose to four sevens and make this, you know, because at the time you don't know if the ace is coming on the turn, obviously. So,
yeah.
But yeah, if somebody out there with 5-6, they'd come along with that $3 bet, and on a turn they probably might feel like they're now you bet six, they're like stuck. They have to call six to try to make this straight. You know, and then you're getting some money out of them at least. So maybe that's. I like the idea of at least seeing that river so that somebody could make quad sevens on us. We get 100 out of it instead of 20. You know, and not that you'd force them out anyway with a seven in their hand, but they had like they were in a big blind or something. And they had deuce seven. You know, they see some heat from you. They may fold that seven. Who knows? Some people are capable of that. I don't think they are in this game, but some people are. But you're right. I think maybe trying to extract money out of him as soon as possible in this kind of game.
Well, let me go back to this situation. Our hero is in the cutoff, right? So, let's see. I'm trying to see who came along. Button. So, three limpers before him.
Right.
So, he puts in a raise there. Probably at least going to get the big blind to come along. Might get the other two in between him anyhow to come along. Definitely going to get those other three to come along. So, let's say you pick up 12. You lose 6. That's $6 in value. He cost himself in his pot by not raising preflop.
Yeah. That's probably the right thing, because even if you're playing for H's cracked, you're not going to get anybody out at that point for $3 more when they've limped. I mean, look at when we play on the ship, nobody folds in our 3-6 hole.
Exactly.
Game.
That's what I'm saying. So.
Yeah. So preflop, yeah.
Right. And then this flop comes. I mean, this flop is completely different if it comes, you know, 3 diamonds or something like that. Absolutely. I'm putting in shutdown mode and hope that I lose at that point.
Yeah.
But this flop is just it doesn't work. I mean, this is a flop you're looking for with aces, right?
Yeah.
And at that point, you can't get too much more value out of it, so you might as well try. But had we gotten value on preflop, then we would have been happier. They've been like what I said, an extra $12. So instead of winning $18, we would win $30.
Yeah, in no limit,
three more in the pot.
In no limit, you run the risk of everybody folding if you make it 10 to go. But in Limit,
oh, exactly. Completely different.
Right. Yep. I never even think about really aces cracked in Limit games. I think I just never think about that. It's a smarter play, really, I think, to play that.
I'll say aces cracked is what makes playing 2-4 Limit playable.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or 3-6. I mean, those games you're just going to get eaten up by the rake, but $100, that's a pretty, you know, it's almost unheard of that you're going to have a $100 pot even in 3-6, let alone 2-4.
Yeah.
Now, you're not going to get aces very often, but, you know.
And even then, if the pot's 100, you've contributed 33 of that. You know what I mean? So it's still not even 100. It would have to be like a $150 pot for it to even be the same equation. You know, so, I like the idea of having aces cracked when you're playing Limit. I might start going down to poker rooms when they have aces cracked and I can play Limit. The problem is that they don't get Limit games going around here, so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, they do get 2-4 going, so.
Oh, that's true. 2-4, yep.
Yeah,
that's right up my alley.
And I don't know of not a ton of rooms here in Florida do aces cracked anymore. It's more kind of Midwestern, I think, to do aces cracked, because we have all the promotions down here now. So,
well, I want to thank Morgan Freeman for scaring the bejesus out of me this week. Much appreciated. Tune in next week when I talk about the asteroids coming again. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.